Welcome to episode 18 of the 2017 Front Stretch Podcast. This week it is a two-man show with my co-host Tom Bowles, and we're going to break down very quickly everything from last week in Daytona, as well as a quick preview of Kentucky and also some silly season talk. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you guys about DraftKings. The NASCAR world has officially reached the summer section, the midpoint of the season. With that, there's still plenty of opportunities to jump in on the action with DraftKings. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. Pick six drivers. Watch how they perform on Saturdays this week or Sundays next week. And if you pick correctly, you can be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is sign up through the DraftKings link on the Front Stretch Podcast article page, make a $5 deposit, and you'll be eligible for a free entry into one of this weekend's contests for Kentucky. Once again, DraftKings.com, where you choose, you play, and you win. Tom, we got an express edition of the podcast this week.
July 4th edition.
July 4th hangover edition, however you want to call it. Recording here on Friday afternoon ahead of some of the, the Xfinity Cup races from Kentucky. So real quick, before we get into some of, the most pressing news, really just want to quickly kind of cover off on everything from Daytona, kind of get your perspective on some things. I was at the track last week. I personally thought that was the best restrictor plate race, maybe in the Gen 6 era. That was an incredible race. A little sloppy, I think. A lot of cautions. I think if you remove the cautions, probably the best restrictor plate race we've seen in a very long time. What was your initial impression kind of watching on TV? I know we kind of had NBC kicking things off. I was at the track. I can kind of give some perspective on that. But give me some of your thoughts as a viewer.
Well, I absolutely thought it was a missed opportunity for the underdogs, right? Ricky Stenhouse Jr. stole one when we could have had eight or nine real upset winners. Mike McDowell, Paul Menard up there finishing in third place, David Ragan leading down the stretch, Brendan Gaughan finishing in seventh, you name it, some of the smaller teams were up there, which I think was really good for the sport. But overall, I think it was an interesting race from the perspective of this is what plate racing will be like without Dale Earnhardt Jr. Because remember, heading in, the story was Earnhardt, and what happens? He hits the wall, gets caught up in a mid-race wreck, never really was a factor, and ends up fading into the background into what could be the final Daytona race of his career. So NASCAR was left to try and cover its bases going forward. And I think what we saw from it was actually a pretty good race. I don't know about your perspective, but I thought it went well. And, it was a showcase of a lot of different types of talent at the front of the field. And at the end, an ability for the underdogs to rise from the ashes when a lot of top contenders got eliminated in some late race wrecks. So it showed that the sport will go on without Earnhardt, but I'm sure for a lot of people, it was a huge disappointment to see Earnhardt not play a factor in what really could have been the last regular season race that he has a chance to win.
Yeah, it was funny being at the racetrack. You kind of get a sense of, you get a good sense of the crowd, the pulse. I thought it was a great crowd, by the way, at the race. Definitely a great energy before the event. I had never personally been to the Coke Zero 400 or the Daytona Summer Race, as you might call it, heading into this weekend. And it was an awesome atmosphere, very exciting. The crowd was very, very engaged in the race when Junior was still. I don't think I'm saying anything that anyone doesn't know here, but they were very engaged in the race when Junior was making his push, and it really felt like early in the race when he was battling up front that it was like, oh my god, like this could be his night. Like, he's got the car, he seems to be on it. He had an aggression about him last week that we haven't seen anywhere this season, I really think, even at the other plate races. And it was crazy to kind of see the kind of like putting a nail in a balloon when he wrecked out for the first time. Then he made his comeback and people really kind of got back into it. And then obviously, he had the second wreck and that really kind of sucked a lot of the air out of the room. But I'll tell you what, the last 50 laps, Junior was completely out of the picture. And we just saw some really good racing those last 50 laps. You had a bunch of different names. fighting at the front, popular drivers, you know, up and coming drivers. You know, you had guys like Blaney and Suarez, who were just making some really incredible moves for the lead. I don't know if that translated well on TV. I watched the race back on television. I thought it was a pretty decent broadcast, but I know that, you know, just because of commercials and stuff, that a couple of some really exciting passes got missed. I think for the lead. I mean, Suarez made a couple moves that just had people, you know, standing up in the crowd, and the crowd really got back into it towards the end. And then you obviously had the underdog factor, which, no, I think that was a little bit of a missed opportunity. Not anyone's fault, you know, everyone's got to go hard. But how about the fact that Ricky Stenhouse, we're not even considering him an underdog at this point, because he's had a pretty decent season. He got that win at Talladega. You know, I think that's a testament to what that team's done this year, and, you know, the progress that they've made, that Stenhouse wasn't a surprise to anybody going to a victory lane and making a strong charge at the end of that race to win. I mean, Stenhouse led a line of cars from about 15th all the way up to the lead late in the race, and then, you know, fought it out for the win. That was incredibly impressive, what he was doing.
I think you could make a case that he would be on top of the play racing ladder once Junior retires. There is a case to be made for that. I think that we're a quick hit culture, so obviously, you know, he wins the last two play races. Everybody starts assuming, oh, there's a changing of the guard. I think you got to go a little bit more than that. But his track record at Daytona and Talladega has always been pretty decent. And I think if you look at the field without Earnhardt, it's pretty wide open, right? I don't think there's one guy that you point to and say he's the plate king, you know?
Well, I would actually disagree with that a little bit. I think that the Penske cars over the past 2 years have shown quite an aptitude for researcher plate racing, and specifically Keselowski. I mean, Brad Keselowski has won in the Gen 6 era, I believe, at the very least, I know he's won three. I think the number actually might be four restrictor plate races in that era. And to win that much on a restrictor plate track is such a testament to a driver's ability, in my opinion. You know, I think a lot of people look at a plate win and say, you know, if you win one, it's kind of a fluke. I think a lot of people look at some guy who just goes up, comes out of nowhere, wins a plate race. Maybe you don't look into it that much. But I think with plate racing, anybody that wins consistently, that's like one of the most impressive things, in my opinion, in the sport. If you can consistently find a ways to win what are the hardest races to win in NASCAR, that says a lot about, you know, at the very least, your abilities on those tracks, and really just, you know, your ability as a driver, I think. They're tough races to win. They're prestigious races to win. They're the races that, quite honestly, all the teams put the most effort into because they all think they can win them. So Keselowski is far and away, I think he's actually currently the best driver, plate racer in NASCAR. I think he's actually a little bit better than Junior is at this stage of the game. That's not really any knock against Junior. I just think that, you know, Keselowski in his prime is a little bit. I think he went to the Dale Jr. School of Drafting to some extent. I think Joey Logano's up there, too. You know, these guys have won a lot of races. I'm not ready to put Stenhouse in that conversation just yet, only because he's kind of come on late in some of these races, and he hasn't shown yet that ability to just dominate a plate race. And I think that's kind of the mark of a really good plate racer, is the guy who can go out, lead a ton of laps, win a few stages in the race, and win that last stage. That's kind of like that last step that I would look for. I think Stenhouse is trending that way, though, and because, to your point, he's seems to have an aptitude for it. He's always been good at it. And, you know, there's going to be more of, you know, a blue ocean to operate in now that, you know, Junior's retired, Jeff Gordon's out. It'll be interesting, you know. I think you make a good point that Stenhouse could be towards the top of that heap. So any final thoughts from Daytona? I thought it was a pretty good weekend overall, I think, in terms of momentum, in terms of where the sport's headed and some of these other things. You know, I thought there was an energy around this year's race that hasn't really existed the past couple of years. I don't know if that kind of came across to you. It came across to me in the lead up to the race. It just seemed like there was just a little bit more energy around the race. I think obviously having the junior factor is important with that, but I think this is a strong race for the sport. And it held up pretty well. You know, I was looking at some of the breakout numbers for the race on the television side, and the race was actually trending a little bit ahead of last year up until Dale Earnhardt Jr. wrecked, which is something that we haven't seen this year. Now, granted, it was down a little bit. It was a 5% decline year over year in viewership, which is actually pretty good if you look at everything else, however all the other races have been this year. But the race was trending ahead up until Junior wrecked, and I think that obviously had an impact. But I don't know. I think it was a pretty good weekend for the sport. What do you think?
I think overall it was a good weekend for the sport. I'd agree with that. I thought that NBC's coverage was relatively decent to start out. And I think everybody that watched on Saturday night, there was nothing there to say, turn away and don't watch for the rest of the year. I think that there was a similar type of vibe that we saw February in Daytona. And I think it's notable that the lead changes on Saturday night were the second most this year other than the Daytona 500.
And
you can make
about the fact that that was the third most number of lead changes in the Daytona summer race in the plate era. I mean, it was a very competitive race, and it translated, I thought, really well at the racetrack.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that looking ahead, we always see Daytona and Talladega go back and forth in terms of who has the better restrictor plate package, per se. And I think Daytona has the edge over Talladega right now. And I still think that the current plate package has gotten to a point where it's relatively decent. And it's definitely not a detractor for NASCAR. Do we have to come up with a solution?
This package is absolutely. I know that there's some complaints on the driver's side about some certain things, and I can understand where some of those complaints are coming from. In terms of just kind of being able to pass a little bit more effectively, maybe spreading them out a little bit more. But like, you know, you're never going to have everything be perfect. And I think that when you look at restrictor plate racing over the past 10 years, the sport lost its way a little bit with plate racing when you had some of the repaves come in, and then you had, you know, the push drafting era. Really suck some life out of those races. And we're finally at a point now where we're putting a consistently pretty solid product on the track for the plate races. That's a good balance between, I think, what, you know, fans kind of grew up with in the mid-2000s and I think there's some kind of new elements to the plate racing nowadays that are nice. I mean, I think these are the races that have held up the best, for sure. Over the last, you know, few years, as other things have declined, so it was good to see, you know, the race take that next step. I thought it was by far the most competitive plate race I've seen in a long time, so that was great. So that pretty much covers all of our Daytona business. I want to talk a little bit more current. You know, it's Friday afternoon. Big piece of news that came out this morning: Matt Kenseth pretty much let it slip. I don't even think he intended to say this. But he let it slip in an interview this morning that he is not going to be with Joe Gibbs Racing in 2018, I should say. And pretty much just opened the floodgates for all types of silly season talk this week. On top of that, a lot of people there's been a lot of rumblings that William Byron could be coming to Hendrick next year on the Cup side, and Alex Bowman could be too, and that Hendrick might not be contracting to three cars. Be going to four cars. So all this silly season talk, what have you been hearing? What are you expecting? And where do you think things kind of go from here, especially for Matt Kenseth?
Well, I don't think the Kenseth thing was all that much of a surprise.
No.
If you look at the performance of JGR over the course of the year, I would argue that the 20 team is right there with Suarez for the bottom of the four cars. I think JGR didn't want to keep Eric Jones at Furniture Row longer than they had to. Eric's doing really well over there. So Eric goes there for 2 to 3 years, is in championship contention, just like Martin Truex Jr. You can make the argument Eric would want to get out of his contract at JGR and stay at Furniture Row, as crazy as that sounds. So I don't think that they wanted Eric to go anywhere. He's the key to their future. Kenseth is 45 years old. It's the way of the world today. And so the difference between Kenseth and Greg Biffle and Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart and all the other drivers that we've seen at his age the last couple of years, he wants to keep racing. He wants to keep going. And I think he will have an opportunity to keep going if he wants to. It may not be in the type of ride that he absolutely expects or the type of quality, Rye, that he's used to, but I think he will get an opportunity somewhere. My money is on Furniture Row. I could totally see him in the second Furniture Row racing car, like the number 77 car, and replace Eric Jones there and do some sort of swap. I always thought the Hendrick story was intriguing, and I think if we are at a different place maybe a month ago and William Byron hasn't won any races yet, well, then absolutely. Then you're going to have that situation happen. But William Byron has shown now in the last little bit that he is capable of being in Cup now. He is capable of being in Cup in 2018, the same way that Chase Elliott started proving himself on the Xfinity side. And I don't know if we were at that point a little while back. So I would say Kenseth goes to Toyota, but certainly the Hendrick rumor is out there. What about you? What do you think?
You know, And again, these are all rumblings, so anyone who's listening, please don't take them for more than what this is, but you know, I'm happy to share some of the things that I've heard. So I think that, obviously, Jones is pretty much signed, sealed, delivered, I'm pretty sure, at Joe Gibbs Racing. I think that's pretty much just a formality at this point. I think Kenseth's interesting. I don't know. I don't think Kenseth has a firm plan right now. Most of the rumblings up until this week had Kenseth landing at Hendrick. And the more I think that William Byron continues to perform, I think that that plan might change. You got to remember, Kenseth's not going to be, or at least not likely to be, bringing sponsorship. He'd be more of a hired gun. Whereas William Byron's got the talent, the upside, the age. And he's going to bring some sponsorship, too. He's going to bring Liberty University with him. So that's going to help at a time when Hendrick really needs it. It sounds like Alex Bowman is actually in pretty good shape for a ride with Hendrick next year. That's kind of been a late-breaking thing that seems to be rumbling around. So I honestly, at this point, expect Bowman and Byron to take the two Hendrick spots. And I think you could see Matt Kenseth land at Stewart Haas Racing. Or I think, to your point, I think it makes the most sense for him to land with Furniture. It's an open seat. Toyota could keep him, and they have the sponsorship. So I think that would seem to work out the best, and then that would give them time to move Christopher Bell up maybe a year after, because Christopher Bell is the future of that program over there, I think. So it's going to be interesting. You know, that's not the only silly season, you know, kind of factor you have here. You know, you've got Ryan Blaney probably, almost certainly, I would say, moving to a third Penske car. I think you're going to see Paul Menard probably wind up with Wood Brothers. I think Darrell Wallace Jr. will probably land somewhere. You've got GMS Racing more than likely come into the Cup Series next year, probably with Casey Kane, I would imagine. So it's going to be really fun to watch these next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
So, as part of our Express Edition this week, that's going to wrap up everything for us. Real quick, Tom, some quick thoughts on Kentucky before we part. What are you expecting this weekend?
I think new pavement means single-file racing, and it's unfortunate because that racetrack used to be one of the best intermediates on the circuit. But I do think that we're going to see Kyle Busch break through this weekend. Joe Gibbs Racing can't be on the sidelines forever. You can't have a winless team with four cars like that through the halfway point of the regular season. So that's who I think is going to be in victory lane.
Fantastic. Well, you heard it from the best. Catch us next week. Full podcast. And then we've got Kentucky this weekend on NBCSN. You've also tonight, once this goes live, it should go live ahead of the Xfinity race on NBCSN as well. So tune in for those. You've also got some IndyCar racing from Iowa, which should be pretty exciting on Sunday at 5:30. So make sure to catch all of that, all on the NBC Sports Group family of networks. We'll catch you next week.